Well, the Mondragon co-ops in Spain have seemed to many on the left to demonstrate a successful and very different economic model, a cooperative model that broke down the hierarchy and inequality of late capitalism, a model that is egalitarian and democratic. But the reality has fallen short of the dream. Here is the Old Mole's Bill Resnick to talk with Sharon Kazmir, who has written a book about Mondragon.
Sharon Kazmir, welcome to KABU.
Thank you. I'm glad to be with you.
Sharon Kazmir teaches, chairs the Department of Anthropology at Hofstra University. She authored the book, The Myth of Mondragon, Cooperatives, Politics, and Working Class Life in a Basque Town. So, Sharon Kazmir, Mondragon is becoming a mecca for the left, was seen as demonstrating a very successful, very different economic model, a cooperative model that broke down the hierarchy and inequalities of late capitalism, a model that was egalitarian and democratic. But if at the beginning it showed a lot of great promise, the reality fell short of the dream that many on the left propagated, especially recently. Sharon Kazmir, tell us why you came to study Mondragon in the late 1980s and early 90s. Then we can get into your findings and the findings of others and conclude with what Mondragon can teach us about worker cooperatives, how to have the best chance that they will be stably democratic and still survive in a capitalist economy. So, Sharon, what attracted you to Mondragon to study it?
Well, I first learned about Mondragon as an undergraduate student at the University of Massachusetts. I think a lot of people get their first introduction to Mondragon in an early class like that. In my class, where I learned about Mondragon was on an anthropology class on egalitarian societies. So we learned about the cooperative model in the context of other and longer-term expressions of egalitarian and democratic relations within human societies. So what's important for me, my questions going in about the cooperatives were really rooted in this anthropological sense that humans are very capable of being egalitarian and democratic and non-hierarchical, and that different ways of organizing societies enabled those capacities. They might have particular sets of problems or challenges, but that we were as a species, you know, clearly capable of this kind of set of human and social relations. So that was my kind of more philosophical set of interests going into Mondragon. But I went there specifically to do my dissertation research. My first trip was in 1987. And then I returned in 1989 and 90 for about a year and a half of intensive ethnographic field work in the town of Mondragon and also in a Fagor at the time. It became part of Fagor Electrodomésticos, the big group of domestic appliances, but at the time was an individual Fagor factory that produced washing machines. And I compared that factory with a local, non-cooperative, but unionized washing machine factory to really see what the differences were for workers of being in a cooperative versus being in a unionized firm. My introduction to the city came very close to the ground. And what I mean by that is, you know, even before I made my way into my many meetings with Mondragon management and the bureaucracy, I met workers in town. And my first encounter with, you know, working class folks, I was in my mid-20s, folks of my own age who were working in the cooperatives, either as, you know, relatively new members or as temporary workers. My first introduction was really through their perspective, and they were not animated and enthused and committed to the workplace as an alternative form of work organization. They felt alienated in their jobs. They felt supervised by, if they were temporary workers, they felt supervised and scrutinized by the members. They felt that the work was, you know, very regimented and very stressful. So there was no real sense that working in a cooperative had a meaningful difference in their work lives. And as I had further conversations with them, there was all similarly no real sense that the democratic participation that was available to them through the social councils and the general assemblies of the cooperatives made a meaningful difference either. And so very early on, I came upon this clear sense that what was missing from the very robust dialogue on the Mondragon cooperatives, and the Mondragon cooperatives is a model for egalitarianism or a model for the left or an anti-capitalist model, what was clearly missing was a working class perspective. And it struck me as quite odd and counterintuitive that people from the left would go to look at an industrial system and not want to really focus on what workers were experiencing in that system. The literature really took the word of management and took the word of the people who were charged with communicating with outside people through seminars or organized trips, took the word of those people as the kind of perspective of the group, as what was really going on. Yeah.
Sharon, you were talking, though, to the non-members. When co-ops begin hiring other labor under different conditions, and non-members means they weren't voting, they weren't asked to participate, and they were being pushed hard to, as in fact workers were pushing themselves, the members were pushing themselves because this big washing machine plant, they were in hot competition with many other firms, and in fact not distinguishing themselves as more profitable. What about the members? How did they feel about it?
I was talking to both temporary workers and members on a regular basis, and what I learned from members was similarly the case that their work lives were not substantially different from the capitalist firm down the street, nor was their involvement in democratic decision-making empowering in a way that was robust. And when I compared their participation in the cooperative democratic organs with the ways that unionized members were able to take power over the shop floor through their union and through standard union procedures, I found that the co-op workers, in fact, had less real power on the shop floor in meaningful ways in daily life.
Of course, the Spanish unions were, at that time, especially in Basque country, that had this great traditions of community empowerment, of worker fight back. The Franco regime, the Spanish dictatorship, was particularly murderous towards the Basque country and Basque workers and the people of Barcelona and the countryside. I mean, they really had powerful unions and traditions of asserting power. This is Bill Resnick for The Old Mole. I'm talking to Sharon Kashmir, who's studied Mondragon, the great experiment in worker cooperatives, so important to the left as proving that they do work. What Sharon found, this is though the late 80s and 90s, is that workers in cooperative production in Mondragon were, in many of the cases, less involved in their work and less participatory and felt they had less power on the shop floor than in unionized plants in Mondragon. Sharon Kashmir, how is this being explained, and what's your explanation?
Well, my explanation really stemmed from looking at the working class as a whole in the region and in Mondragon, as the city of Mondragon in particular. And what I saw, and the lesson I thought was not being taught from Mondragon, there are lots of positive lessons from Mondragon, and I think we should talk about those. But one sort of real warning was that co-ops very early on began to fragment and divide the local working class, such that cooperative members really kind of took themselves out of the broad-based working class movement and then the labor movement that had been so important under Franco and had been so important in the development of a left and a socialist project for the Basque Country. And you had said before, and you're quite right, that it was a really robust socialist and radical labor movement, but what was missing was the co-op workers. And as early as the 1970s, you get some critiques from the left, from the Basque left, about this fact. The cooperative workers are not solidaric. They are, you know, a aristocracy of labor in our midst. And that kind of developed throughout. The other thing is that there are no internal strikes allowed in the cooperatives. So that means you don't get the development of a political cohort and a group of leaders the way you do in a factory where you have union agitation, labor struggle, strikes, you know, conflict. And so you really had a lack of a cohort that could lead an alternative working class vision within the co-ops. And so what I saw is that a kind of managerial perspective, which quickly became a kind of bureaucratic, we have to compete, we have to do everything possible to compete, competition is the most important thing, that discourse and that perspective took over without workers' ability to effectively confront it with any kind of alternative plan or strategy for the future of the co-ops.
Yeah, of course, the workers have been unable to come up with an alternative plan or strategy for quite a long time as capital became more mobile over greater distances, but it was still very mobile in the late 80s and 90s. Instead of moving to China, they were moving to Mexico or moving to the American South, prospecting for cheaper labor, however they could get it. And workers were situated in factories and communities and couldn't move and didn't want to. That's partly the reason that wages for manufacturing workers, particularly those considered unskilled, Mondragon and Fager, were under tremendous pressure, financial pressure, in order to maintain relatively high wages and decent conditions in their factories in Spain.
This is true. So what they've done quite effectively up until recently, there really hasn't been a bankruptcy and a kind of flight of capital out of the Basque region. So anybody who looks at Mondragon, even me, who I'm a critic, I see very clearly that they've been very good at wedding capital to place. So workers in the Basque country, members in the Basque country, retained their jobs. But they did that at the expense, and this goes back to the issue of fragmentation, but now we'll talk at a global scale. They did that at the expense of employing wage laborers in subsidiaries throughout the world. I think there's something like 100 foreign subsidiaries at this point in Mondragon. And the workers in those subsidiaries are working at wage rates that are equivalent of their developing or post-Soviet bloc wages, and they're exploited at the rates that all international capitalists exploit workers. And there's some very good research out of the University of the Basque Country, Bilbao, by economists that look at these subsidiaries and show that the conditions in the Mondragon-owned subsidiaries are really no different than any capitalist firm. So yes, they've contained work in the Basque Country. The cooperatives have successfully contained work in the Basque Country. But if we're talking about these enterprises, not just as capitalist businesses that may or may not be better for workers, but as models of socialism, we don't want to build models of socialism based on a global division of workers where some benefit at the expense of others. That's nobody's vision of socialism. It reminds me of a really powerful quote by W.E.B. Du Bois, and he's looking at race riots in East St. Louis and a mass slaughter of black workers by white workers, and he says, "Socialism for whom?" So we want to be careful to create models of socialism that create sort of egalitarian relations across what might otherwise have been divisions and inequalities among workers. And that's kind of the heart of where the Mondragon model doesn't serve us well.
This is KBOO Radio, Portland, Oregon. Bill Resnick here talking to Sharon Kazmir, who wrote the book, The Myth of Mondragon, Cooperatives, Politics, and Working Class Life in a Basque Town. Sharon, earlier in the interview, you said there's lots of things in Mondragon that we can be proud of and learn from and that move in the right direction. You also pointed out that within the longstanding economic crisis of the West and the huge pressure on industrial workers, particularly from competition when capital got completely mobile, from people earning 1/10, 1/20 of their wage in mass production plants, that Mondragon moved in really completely the wrong direction. That is, by outsourcing, by putting up factories in China and particularly the Eastern Bloc, the former Soviet satellites, where workers were ready to work for very little. What was good about Mondragon? What can we still look to? In fact, they recognized that they fell into bad patterns and were trying to get out of it and were trying to escape that. And what does it teach us about how to structure cooperatives, to structure them so that they operate as global workers rather than just fighting for their local jobs however they can?
I think that's the right question. There are a lot of good things about Mondragon, and criticism aside, we want to look at most notably the idea that you can create some community control over capital. right? So that's an important dimension of this, that the property ownership in the hands of the workers creates a level of community control over capital. We want to broaden that community and make it less exclusive, but we want to sort of think about how to structure that in ways that are meaningful. The other thing is the Mondragon is well known for having a very minimal pay differential between the lowest paid worker and the highest paid manager. It's capped at 1 to 9, and in many of the cooperatives, it doesn't even reach that. And it shows us that we can produce efficiently without very highly paid managers or CEOs. And that's a very, very important lesson. I think you're right that there's a recognition that the subsidiary model creates contradictions that have to be addressed. And so there are some efforts to kind of globalize some of the learning, democratic learning structures of the cooperatives, really kind of spread a culture of cooperative democracy. And I'm not sure that there are real successes yet to point to, but the initiatives are interesting and important in the kind of global support for social economy initiatives that Mondragon represents are quite an important feature of the system. So those are some of the real main contributions that Mondragon gives to the international left. It's also a tricky thing because I think we want to teach our students and young people that there's a model out there that works. And I want to do that too, but I want to do that without suggesting that the only thing we look at is our own workers and their well-being in our one little place. And that's the kind of contradiction that you pointed to. So what I try to emphasize when I talk about this is that cooperatives, yes, but within a larger political and social movement, and that we can't neglect the movement piece of this. And the role that cooperatives play gets determined by the nature of the larger movement and its connections and alliances with that larger movement. There's a really interesting article in Jacobin magazine in March by Sam Gindin that really lays out some of these larger political questions for cooperatives that I think is very articulate and useful on this topic. We can't look at cooperatives as the path to socialism. They may play a part in a larger social movement, but they're not going to get us to socialism within a capitalist economic system. If there's a single lesson from the Mondragon cooperatives is that you really just can't build socialism and engage in capitalist competition. The contradictions are too great. And what we see happening is that it can benefit some workers, but it can't create broad-based egalitarian relations.
Sharon Kasmer, thanks a lot for talking to us. One final thing, though. You mentioned Sam Gindin's article in Jacobin. I also want to suggest your article in the New Labor Forum, The Mondragon Cooperatives and Global Capitalism, a Critical Analysis, on page 52 of the New Labor Forum for winter 2016. We'll put those links up on when we archive this interview. Sharon Kasmer, thanks so much for talking to us.
Thanks, Bill.
Right, so long. Keep up the good work.